Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy any investment based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Hello and welcome to the Midweek Takeaway. Today we're joined by Rory Harding, CEO of Arcor Resources. Welcome back, Rory. How's life?
Wonderful. Great to be with you again.
Absolutely. So we just saw the news that Arcor has commenced field work at its Erongo uranium project in Namibia ahead of its maiden drilling program, with geological mapping, trenching and sampling progressing on schedule. A completed downhole gamma ray survey of 106 historic drill holes identified multiple uranium anomalies, while trenching has exposed stacked uraniferous leucogranite sheets containing visible carnotite mineralization, with assays pending. An initial 1,500-meter reverse circulation drilling program comprising around 42 holes is due to begin following rig mobilization on the 29th of June, with a further fully funded 2,500-meter program planned in Q3 of 2026, supporting a sustained 4,000-meter exploration campaign and continued news flow through the second half of the year. So, Rory, this legacy drilling and recent trenching, which have both produced encouraging uranium indicators, what will you be looking for from this maiden drilling program to demonstrate that Erongo has potential to host an economically significant uranium deposit?
So, as I mentioned before, we've got the two types of targets, one in these paleochannels, these calcrete-hosted deposits, which is what they have in terms of resource with our neighbors at Orano. They've got a huge tonnage there, 300 million tons, probably going to upgrade that at around 120 ppm, and then Maranika and Elevate Uranium to the north of us, who've again recently updated their resource grade and the size of their resource, which is around, I think now, about 80 million tons. I think they've gone up to 160 ppm now. So these big low tonnage paleo channels, these ancient rivers that have precipitated uranium in them that's come out of leach fluids. And then you've got the ULGs, these alaskites, which is the uranium in the hard rock, in the granite. And so we're exploring for both. So the legacy drill holes, around 100 of them, were step outs from previous programs, and they weren't on particular grids, but you know, a lot of them were in random places, quite frankly. But I guess that's where, you know, explorers have followed the main grid, and previous guys have been in the area, whether it's from the Uramin, probably from the Uramin days pre-Orano takeover, and you know, put a hole here and a hole there. And so we did a downhole spectrometry of those, and so that's quite a sophisticated process in terms of the calibration. So, and these guys are very, very experienced that do this. So working for all the contractors, you know, in Namibia going back decades. And so they produce a uranium equivalent number from surveying that hole, looking at the different channels of uranium, thorium and potassium. So it's well calibrated, and because they've actually worked on that particular material and project before. So it is good data. We do report it as an equivalent U308 rather than an assay, but it is good data. And we found some decent widths within our paleo channel targets in the eastern side, 7 meters, I think, in one place, over 100 ppm, some high grade spots, you know, up to 300 ppm. So we've got to test now systematically the continuation, like how much channel fill, how much tonnage, how much grade. It's not completely homogeneous through the material. So you might have like one layer of, you know, a few hundred ppm of 1 meter, then nothing for a couple of meters, and then another, you know, meter of, you know, 200 ppm, and then big sections of, you know, 10 meters at 50 ppm. And it all kind of gets blended into that average grade number that you see. So we've definitely got uranium there. We've got uranium at surface. The holes have kind of confirmed some of our targets. And indeed, they let us dismiss certain areas and go, okay, that actually helps us narrow the target now. These processes are systematic, just sort of going through the stages, systematic exploration. It was something that we had to do, was look at those holes. And then on the ULGs, there are not historical holes there, because it was obviously paleo channels they were looking for and drilling. That's where we've trenched. And so we've now scraped down to expose the rock underneath, and we've seen what we hope to find, which is this stacked ULGs. Again, haven't assayed them yet. We have a sort of a handheld spectrometer we use in the field that's being calibrated right now, and then in the future we'll be able to sort of report more stuff in terms of grades on an ongoing basis. But we found alaskites or ULGs, interleaved with metasediments and schists. So what we expected to find over a big distance. What's the continuity? What's the grade? We don't know. That's why we're just sort of going step by step by step. And then we've got the contractor coming in, hopefully on Monday. Well, not hopefully, they will be there on Monday. They'll be mobilizing and hopefully, drilling within a couple of days after that.
Yeah. And I also want to touch on that. Obviously, 4,000 meters of fully funded drilling planned across both those targets. When do you expect to have enough data to define the project scale and prioritize the areas with the greatest development potential?
So that 4,000 meters being split between the ULG targets and the paleochannel targets. So this first program now, and hopefully we roll straight into the second program from the first program, and pay it, so we don't have to pay a mobilization again. But the first 1,500 meters is going to be drilled on that eastern paleochannel. And so that will be, we took a horizontal loop electromagnetic survey before, which let us map a bit of that profile. We've got the historical holes, we've got surface samples, and now we're going to drill effectively straight lines across, perpendicular to the channel at intervals, and just start to map it, and it will be systematic. So once we do this first program, that will give us a good idea of the indication and the grades, and then a follow-on program, will come from that. So these are systematic processes. So step by step by step, but everything's moving in the right direction. On the ULGs, once we get the sampling back, that will be the second phase of the program. With 2,500 meters, we'll move from the paleochannels to the ULGs. And so once we get the assays back, once we've mapped it, we'll do some more trenching and we'll work out where we stick the holes and see what the depth continuity is of these kind of stacked layers. Almost like a mille feuille, So we're looking for the custard, or the crème pâte. Depends how you like to make it. You look like a baker, Kevin. You're a baker?
When it comes to sweet things, I'm not really an eater
Oh, you're not.
or a baker. But
Well,
if you ask me
we won't
to make
find
your
you on a
sausage
baker.
rolls, I can make your sausage rolls.
What? I
Um,
don't know.
but
Is it scones? Scones, Rory? Do we put the jam and then the cream, or
oh, not
cream
the
and
Cornish
jam
Devon
first?
debate.
Cream first.
Scones, not scones.
Scones, scones, darling. Sorry, Kev's been spending too much time with the upper classes, sadly. But I don't know, a scone. I think, ultimately the key thing here is there's two things for me, right? The first is that there's very few uranium plays in London, right? So people looking for uranium exposure, looking for something decent, exploration based, this is something to go after, Arkle. And the second thing is it's just the sheer amount of news flow that you've got coming in the next 6 months. So 4,000 meters of drilling, all of those assays are coming back, the mapping, the HLM survey lines for sampling across the different targets, next generation of drill targets. You're probably going to have an RNS coming out every couple of weeks, right, over the next 6 months.
That's the goal. We're mapping out that at the moment, but I think so. We've got so the next thing I guess we'll be reporting will be, well, we'll start drilling next week, and if we're lucky, the con so we do it. So we do two things when we drill. So not only do we take the sections from the RC drilling, the sort of one meter every meter of chips that we will assay, but we'll also do the same downhole spectrometry as we go. So that contractor will hopefully be following 2 or 3 days behind the drill rig.
And you get the
So
data.
we'll get that sort of data before the assays come in as well. Again, there can need to be a bit of a calibration period, but that shouldn't take too long because we can even use local assays for that with the local labs for that calibration. So we'll have that coming in. So hopefully, and look, these guys should drill pretty quick. So 1,500 meters, a couple of weeks of drilling. So we're not talking about a long protracted drilling program. So we're being pretty aggressive with it, and actually I could commend our local team and for getting this all done so quickly. It's not easy to organize and get contractor availability, and it takes a lot of pressure and getting everyone there. So that's all good, and then we're going to have sampling back from the ULG trenches. We're going to have additional mapping once we get, again, calibration of some of the spectrometry equipment done. We'll get more real-time results out of the field. Hopefully next month we'll have some results out of our first hole at Stone Park, and then in Namibia we'll then be hopefully by that point getting the drill assays back. Lab turnaround times, as you know, Charles, a product of a good market is slow turnaround times. And you know, in a bad market, you get your assays back in a week. So I'd rather it is the way it is right now,
No, I agree.
that everybody's busy and there's a
To be
slightly
honest,
delay.
I was surprised that you got a contractor to come out and do the drilling so, I don't know, easily. Maybe it wasn't so easy.
It's a lot of it is it's luck or fate or however you'll have it, because it's a first come first serve business often with the
Of
contractors,
course it
right?
is.
They have a contract and you're there, you sign it and you do it. So, and there's lots of going on right now, lots of people drilling in Namibia, lots of activity. It's very much a hot spot, and so you just got to catch someone in a window. So you tell them you need them and you tee it up and you say, when's your start date roughly? And they're sort of like, well, let us know, 10 days before and we'll tell you if the rig's available. We're coming off a job. And then so, you catch them at the right time.
I mean, the other thing is obviously, ideally, you do some drilling, you hit the jackpot straight away, but particularly with uranium exploration, it doesn't tend to work like that. So what does success look like? What are you looking, hoping to see over the next few months as the assays
Yeah.
come back?
Well, look, all exploration to an extent is systematic. It's not like drilling a deep porphyry or some particular gold systems where you're going to hit that center and it's like the discovery hole, right? There's uranium here. We know there's uranium here. It's a question of how much. So it's very much about systematically building up a profile. So what does success look like? It looks like finding decent widths of uranium in a paleo channel. At a grade that you can see starts to add up to, a tonnage that you could get to tens of millions of pounds at, a cutoff of 100 ppm, right? That's probably where it is. I mean, there's some of the cutoffs actually as low as 50 ppm on these big tonnage systems, but you want to say, so that's what we want to see. So we'll drill enough holes to start to see a good profile. And that will then guide the next phase of drilling. And then you'll step out from those holes and you'll start to follow the profile of the channel and you'll drill, and then you'll eventually get to infill drilling. On the ULGs, what we hope to see is a decent grade of uranium within those ULG lenses across that southern target. And then what we want to see from the drilling program after that is continuity of those lenses to depth.
Yeah, well, grade is the number one thing. You get the right grade, off you go. Continuity follows. And then in terms of metallurgy, mineralogy, all of that kind of fun stuff, because you're right next door to me, that's the kind of stuff that's actually a bit de-risked already because we're
It's
so close.
completely de-risked because it's understood. Well, it's not de-risked in terms of what we find, but in terms of the understanding of it, because the carnotite within these paleo channel matrices and the material around it is it's the same as
As
of our
as everywhere
neighboring and
else.
existing mines and it's well understood.
I think that's, but sorry to interrupt you, that's the key thing, right? Because if you find something which is economic, and has decent value, you have willing buyers very close by who understand it, who can put it through their plants with no issue,
And
right?
it's relevant to grade because one of the things, and some of the listeners may not know this, but our neighbor to the north, Elevate Uranium, with the Maranika deposit, not only are an explorer with a resource, but they actually have a technology, which is a uranium upgrade kind of front-end sorting technology, which allows them to process lower grades. So I think their cutoffs are a ridiculously low number. So then again, the nice thing is about these will be, open pittable resources, whether they're hard rock in the ULGs or whether they are the paleo channel hosted deposits. So, we can have resources, mineable resources at much lower grades than you would see other places in the world that are mineable in Namibia. So, if you've got a couple of hundred, even on the ULGs, if you've got, 200 ppm and you've, again, the nature of it, talking about your metallurgical question, it's really about, how much marble have you got and how much barren material have you got in these layers. It's this kind of, in these milfoy type of, stack of metasediments and ULGs. How much waste have you got and how does that affect leach and how does that affect economics? But if you've got a couple of hundred ppm there and you've got, grades of 100 to 120 ppm in the paleo channels, you've got mines at those grades.
Yeah, indeed.
They're mineable.
Yeah, and the, again, I think the key thing I'm keep going back to is that the mines, the actual plants, because your neighbors are so close by, a lot of that potential CapEx is already built. It's already been taken into account. Last one from me, Rory, and it's more kind of like a technical question, maybe not a technical question, but when you go drilling for like copper or gold, the worst thing that's going to happen is you don't find anything. When you go drilling for uranium, if you hit the jackpot, you're digging radioactive stuff out of the ground while you go drilling. Is it like bright green? Do you grow tentacles? Is it safe?
Well, it's the levels of these uranium deposits, it's background radiation levels. So I mean, it's been lots of people, geologists, workers, etc., have been in these environments for a very long period of time. And I won't claim to be a complete expert on all of the sort of health data that's associated with it. But essentially, it's safe enough an operating environment with background levels of radiation where gamma is reduced significantly over distance, right? So unless it's right there and it's up close. So these are relatively low levels of radiation, and you've got to remember that once you take a rock with 200 ppm, you extract the uranium, you leach that, you condense it, you produce a yellow cake. You've got a pure material then, but even then it needs to be before it becomes any sort of radioactive kind of processed isotope, or whether that's in the healthcare sector, whether that's as an energy commodity, whether that's within well as a weapon, it needs enrichment,
Indeed.
and then it's enrichment, and then that's when you end up with very high levels of radioactivity. But look, essentially it's a safe working environment, and we're it's progressing very well, the exploration program. We're seeing what we've hoped to see, and we'll systematically just keep going from stage to stage, and hopefully, as we've said before, by follow-up program to this program, would be trying to drill to some sort of MRE.
Excellent. And I have one more. I just want a little update on Stone Park. That's all.
So Stone Park, as we're going to drill, or our operator partner Group 11 are drilling four holes at Stone Park over the next 18 months now, 15,500 meters. The first phase of four holes is 2,700 meters. Bit of flexibility on that, so they'll drill holes slightly longer if they're onto something. And three of those will be on that southern Karakittle prospect, and one is a step out from the Stone Park resource. So that Stone Park, northern Stone Park hole, the step out should be done relatively soon. I think it's about a 750 meter hole, and so then assays should be into the labs, and we'll be expecting some news out of that by the end of next month, early August, out of the first
Perfect.
hole. So seems to be progressing very well, and good indications from initial reporting.
Good. Yeah.
So Rory, I haven't known you too long, but in the months I have known you, I see you as a bit of a go-getter entrepreneur. So, what other assets do you anticipate that you might add to our?
Well, we are keen to expand our uranium footprint. We, of course, are looking in Namibia, for additional projects and acreage that could be pulled into our land package. I mean, you could already say we're, essentially, district scale to an extent. It's over 500 square kilometer land package, but we'd like to build that out if and when appropriate. Those have the, M&A always has to be accretive to shareholders, not overly dilutive. It's got to make sense for everyone. And right now we've certainly got enough to get our hands around. We've got multiple targets. We got a lot to drill. But if it makes sense, we would acquire more assets in Namibia in the uranium space. And we have, we always look at things that are shown to us. Indeed, in Botswana as well, where those opportunities are available. Beyond that, Arkle's very, we're focused on the uranium. Yes, we've got this lovely asset in Stone Park. You may have seen the research note from Hannam & Partners that came out a couple of weeks ago, putting a very nice value on our interest in Stone Park, over $21 million. So there's a lot of value sitting there, in that Stone Park, and asset, and we of course are drilling now, so we hope to see some value addition there if it's a successful drilling program. But beyond that, we're really focused on uranium. We're very bullish on the uranium market. We think it's the right commodity, right space, as Charles has just said, one of very few explorers in London market. And so we are very focused on that and taking these projects we already have through the development curve.
So based on what you've said for Stone Park, really the uranium as it stands is more than a free hit in our.
Oh yeah. I mean, masses of upside there, relatively early stage. As I said, there's certainly uranium there. We've got lots of targets, but early stage, but going through a systematic exploration program, step by step, all being well, we should be able to release a lot of value.
Well, on that note, we'll say Rory Harding, CEO of Arkor Resources. Thanks very much for appearing on the podcast.
Yeah, it's great to see you all again. Thanks for having me.
Cheers, Rory.
This podcast was brought to you by Roast PR Limited. If you would like to appear on a future episode of The Sunday Roast, please email admin@thesundayroast.net.